Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst-case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the 1992 Guadalajara explosions. Here's what you need to know. Guadalajara is the capital city of Mexico's famed Jalisco state, the birthplace of cultural icons such as tequila and mariachi. The historic city sits on an arid, mile-high plain 300 miles west of Mexico City. In mid-April of 1992, residents of downtown Guadalajara's Reforma district began to notice the smell of gasoline and chemicals coming from their toilets and drains. Most ignored the smell, assuming it was the result of the annual spring cleaning of La Nogalera, a gasoline storage facility belonging to state-owned oil monopoly Pemex. By April 19, which was Easter Sunday, the smell worsened, and complaints began to roll in to the Guadalajara Fire Department and the Water Sewage System, Sistema Intermunicipal de Agua Potable y Alcantarillado, known as SIAPA, SIAPA. By Tuesday, April 21st, the concerning odor was making headlines. The fire department and SIAPA tested water samples from various sewers in the Reforma neighborhood and discovered concentrations of up to 100% explosivity. They suspected the solvent was coming from La Central, a cooking oil processing plant where hexane was reportedly being stored. The cooking oil company's board of directors promptly shut down the plant at midnight on April 21st, while denying the company's responsibility for the dangerous fumes. The fire department proceeded to open manhole covers in the area to allow the alleged hexane gases to escape and flush the gas out of the city sewer pipes with water. The firefighters believed the problem was solved when they remeasured explosivity levels at 3:30 a.m. on April 22nd and found that they had been reduced from 100% to 15%. So they went home. By 9 a.m. that same morning, explosivity levels were back up to 100%. The director of SIAPA immediately met with the Jalisco state government to discuss the threat, though SIAPA and the fire department continued to reassure residents that there was nothing to worry about. 1 hour later, around 10 a.m., on April 22nd, 1992, the explosions began. In rapid succession, over several hours, approximately 7 miles of sewer pipe exploded below the densely populated Guadalajara. Buses and cars were hurled into the air, homes were demolished, and entire families buried into piles of rubble. According to one report, the blasts measured 7.1 and 7.0 on the University of Mexico's Richter scale, located hundreds of miles away in Mexico City. The heart of Guadalajara was left in ruins. Fun facts, aka death stats. Multiple blasts over about 4 hours destroyed nearly 7 miles of sewer lines, and in the worst hit places, left 25-foot deep trenches of rubble. The explosions happened within a span of 4 hours. 1,000 buildings were partially damaged, and another 1,000 were demolished completely. 350 businesses were lost. 505 vehicles were destroyed. 1,400 residents were injured, and 210 died. Around 15,000 people were left homeless as a result of the disaster. With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, Alarmy.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
DJ Khaled, we the best music.
And special surprise, it's just the three of us.
That's why I got loose there.
I know.
Yeah, that's like Chris is acting as guest and fact checker.
I'm my own, and today I'm my own fact checker, and I decided to give myself the day off for my own facts. I'll still fact check for you guys, but I'm not going to check fact my own facts.
I think. Thank God. Does that mean we don't get any of your personal facts?
It means you don't have the double seal of security. Like, is
oh,
it
oh no?
Now it's just the cheap dollar store one seal of security.
Oh, no.
Like you get at the dollar store.
How about you, Amanda? Are you at 100%?
I'm at 110%, baby. Like every day. I'm rip roaring, ready to go.
All right, I'm just gonna go 100, just because you took 110.
Hmm. Okay,
that's great. It's good. One of us should be over. Chris is at 50 and I'm at 100. And today we get to discuss our own fears. What is it that's keeping us alarmed? What's keeping us up at night?
I actually thought about this early this morning. Well, I was like, if Rebecca asked me what's alarming me these days, what is it? And I have an answer.
What is it?
Plastics.
Oh.
Plastics are alarming me.
Oh, no. Tell us.
Tell us.
I just, multiple informational sources have come my way. There was a Nova documentary on PBS about fertility and how exposure to plastics might be responsible for low fertility rates. And just in general, just thinking about like single-use plastics and then you start to look around your house and you go, wow, look at all this plastic, and thinking about my Tupperware and I got to get rid of all the plastic Tupperware, and it gets so overwhelming. But I am like, we bought, you know, new reusable water bottles, which we had already had some, but we bought like good ones that we'll want to use.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to get rid of all my plastic Tupperware because I'm like, what am I doing? And I have a couple glass ones, but I hate wasting stuff. So I'm like, I don't want to throw out these plastic Tupperwares. I can recycle them, I think. But yeah, so I've been concerned about plastics, and it was making me think we should do an alarmist episode, get into some of this stuff, maybe do Teflon.
Oh, yeah. That'll keep me up at night. You know, it's just one little scratch and you're exposed.
Yes.
One little scratch on a pan and all of a sudden you're all exposed.
Right. Well, the other thing about Teflon is that they dump their chemicals into like poor rivers and
looks like someone's not fact checking.
Not today.
I'm allowed
to say whatever I want.
It sounds like something that would happen. We're gonna have to do a deep dive on it because we got to
get Rebecca on the case is what we have to do.
We'll look into it.
She's got a long laundry list of historical tragedies, and we've just got
to... And we'll get to it.
It's just like you get to a bakery, you pick up a number, and you just wait in line. We'll get to plastics.
Okay.
Chris, what is alarming you these days?
Let's see. What's alarming me these days? Boy, I tell you, this drought in California.
Oh, yeah.
Here the season comes with all of the wildfires sort of pending, almost like just like a fait accompli, like it's going to happen again. We know we're going to get bad fires because of the drought combined with these conditions, which have not changed since last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite an undertaking, and when you live out here in the desert, we live in a desert, you feel it every day. It's hot.
You feel it.
It's dry. It's arid. How much can we continue to live off of the water from the Colorado River and from the north, the Sierras? It's just very, I think it's tenuous.
We just don't know the numbers.
We don't know the numbers. There are very, very lots of them. There are a lot of numbers. And I'm a fact checker. So I've seen, I deal with numbers. Don't get me, I've seen 1,000, 100, 200, 2,000, 40,
yeah, all
55.
The numbers.
I've dealt with a lot of numbers.
I have actually been stressing about a similar thing. Fire safety frustrations. Recently, it was the 4th of July.
Mm.
It seems like people are don't care and are just doing fireworks, you know, galore whenever they want to. It's illegal here. They're still doing it.
Yeah, they were all over our area.
Yeah.
And
you know, they're doing it in like the middle of the street, and like there's trees and that could easily catch fire. Like, have we not learned from all of the gender reveal explosions? It just don't look at a fire. Go to a park, look at a fire work display. Or go turn on the TV.
I was going to say, you just stop.
No, fire
and go to a park,
look at a fire, light one in a trash can, like a sane person.
But that's alarming me. And recently I've just been imagining my, when I drive, everything is so hot. I just imagine things like turning into balls of fire.
Like wow. What?
Like cars. Yeah. I'm like, jeez. Cars are hot. And then I just, it gets dark, guys. It gets real dark.
To live inside that head.
Yeah, exactly. That's the alarmist nightmare. I was going to say an alarmist stream, but that's the alarmist nightmare.
That's right.
God, it's early for Chris.
I think I'm doing great.
So let's get started talking about this very terrible tragedy, which actually did not get a lot of press at the time. I was reading it was because it also coincided with the Rodney King and the LA riots at the time. Okay, just so you understand, the amount of streets that were destroyed by the explosion was equivalent to the distance between Wall Street and Times Square. So it's a massive amount of cityscape that was totally destroyed. Here's an LA Times article that kind of gives you a feeling for how it all went down. Gonzalez Cervantes was at home watching television when the first blasts occurred around 10:30 a.m. There was a huge boom. I came outside and there were cars on roofs and clouds of dust everywhere, Cervantes said. People were crying. They were hysterical. I've never seen anything like it. At a government sports complex, bodies of some of the victims were laid out on a basketball court under white tarpaulins. I don't know what that word is.
Tarps, maybe?
Tarps. Many were older women, children, and babies.
Horrible.
Norma Garcia, 24, came to recover her sister's body. My sister was on her way to the store when the street exploded, she said. We had been smelling gas for days. They had blocked off the street. Cars couldn't get through, but nobody told us to evacuate. After the explosion, she ran up to the roof of her house. I screamed, "My sister is down there." People began digging through the rubble, she said. There were two bodies there. Here, one was my sister. Cecilia Mendoza, 35, came to identify her husband. We were eating tacos on the street, and the street blew up and came down on top of my husband. Mm. I managed to get out, and so did my son. The 12-year-old boy cried, "Mama, I'm over here." She dug him out, but her husband lay crushed to death under tons of asphalt. I mean, it's just so traumatizing.
Horrible.
Fruit stand owner Salvador Aguila Lopez, 23, told the Associated Press that he had just come from the market and was unloading a truck in front of his house. He heard a rumble, grabbed his boy, and threw him into the house. Before he blacked out, Aguila Lopez said, "The street rose up and cars flew up. Then, when it all settled, one car was across the street. One car that was across the street was on top of a mound of rubble that was a house on the other side."
Wow. Mm.
Aguila Lopez said there had been a baby inside the car. The car landed on the mound of rubble and the baby on the roof of another house near it. The baby was alive, he said.
Wow.
It must have been a miracle.
Truly a miracle.
The mother of the baby was found in the beauty shop across the street, half buried in rubble. A neighbor. She was alive, too, probably with broken legs.
How scary. I mean, what's so horrifying about this? Well, it's two things are truly horrifying. One, that you're just living your life and the street explodes. I mean, what would you think would, like, I wouldn't even have any idea. My mind would not go to, like, oh, yeah, there's an issue with, like, the pipes and toxic chemicals in the pipes. I would be like, the world is ending. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that is so horrifying about this is the days long lead up to this disaster, where anyone in their right mind could have foreseen a real issue and evacuated people and did not.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, you probably think, are we being bombed right now?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what is going on? I mean, it must have just been confusing so disturbing and disorienting.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, you know, there. Of course, we all have read the headlines and read the articles about the Miami condo that recently fell.
Right.
And there's footage of the condo falling. It's terribly sad. And I can't imagine what's going through the minds of those people who are suddenly just in their bed, waking up to, you know, a falling building.
In that vein, do you think that there's something we put up, like infrastructure or something like that? Or maybe like regulations or
Well, I'm sure, like, what do you got for us, Rebecca? Because I think you probably have all that stuff ready to go.
Let's start putting things up on the board. And, you know, what I was going to say, it was just that there's footage. This is 1992, you know. There's footage of the aftermath of this destruction and these explosions. And it looks like a terrible earthquake. Just like one of the worst earthquake aftermaths. And what's wild to me is that they kept, it didn't all happen at once. They kept happening like little by little. So you didn't know, I could imagine in all the confusion, you didn't know where the next explosion was going to be. So where do you run? Like, I can't imagine the panic.
Yeah, it's like a war zone for real.
Yeah.
So let's start by putting La Centrale for the hex or the hexane leak. This is according to the text. Shortly after the explosion, Pemex blamed a cooking oil company, La Centrale, saying that the firm had allowed volatile hexane gas to enter the sewer system. But La Centrale quickly cleared its name. So I kind of put them up here just so that we can clear them. Let's start off by clearing them. But it's important. Suburban Emergency Management Group said, chemical engineers agreed that an explosion of this magnitude would have required hundreds of thousands of liters of hexane in the sewer. La Centrale explained that it handled less than 3,000 liters of hexane a day and had a maximum storage capacity of 60,000. So well below that level. What's more, La Centrale's hexane tank was still full after the explosion, and La Centrale itself was fully intact. Chemical engineer Alejandro Villaseñor told the Proceso reporter that if La Centrale had, in fact, been the source of the leak, the factory would have been the first place to explode.
So this is like when I start a to-do list and I put on the top of it, make to-do list, and then I just cross it off. Because we know this is just getting crossed off, right?
Yes, it's getting crossed off. But it was like right immediately after the explosions, this is where the fingers pointed
to. So it's important to know, and just in terms of context of what people were thinking at the
time. And to understand that it was not possible that hexane was the amount of hexane that was necessary to create these explosions. They just didn't have
no.
it.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, now let's talk about pipe construction.
Yay! This is honestly one of my favorite subjects.
What do you like so much about it?
I just love everything about it. The pipe part, the construction part. I love talking about what goes through the pipes.
Well, you're in luck. Pamela Varley said, as promised, Federal Attorney General General Morales completed his report within...
No, the Attorney General.
Oh, sorry.
Federal Attorney General.
What'd she call him?
Well, she thought it was just an
General
attorney.
Morales.
General Morales.
I love that name.
General Morales. Okay, fine. We'll call him by his proper title. Federal Attorney General Morales completed his report within 72 hours. The report concluded that gasoline was indeed the primary cause of the blast, but stated that hexane was also present in the sewers and left open the possibility that the hexane had accelerated the explosion. Further, the report stated that the gasoline had leaked through a 1 centimeter wide hole in a single gas pipe. One Whoa. Centimeter. Friction between the 40-year-old gas pipes and a more recently laid potable water pipe that crossed it had caused the leak. The report continued. The attorney general added that the common practice of using the water pipes as a ground for electrical wires may have contributed to the corrosion by interfering with the gas pipe's cathodic leak protection system. The leak must have been going on for several weeks.
Now, okay.
I know there's a lot of, it's hard to imagine, but maybe this will help. According to corrosion doctors, the first cause of the disaster was a galvanized steel pipe that was occluding in a humid environment with a steel gasoline pipeline. Both of them corroded and gasoline leaked through the holes right in the main sewer.
Okay, interesting. So maybe, Chris, you can look up the word occluding, just so, unless you already know what that means. That was occluding in a human...
I do know what it means, but I'll double check for the audience.
Okay, maybe double check, because what I'm imagining is occluding means like touching. Like they were kind of rubbing up against each other.
Well, actually, it means to block up.
Oh,
interesting. So a
first
steel...
First cause of disaster was galvanized steel pipeline that was occluding in humid environment with a steel gasoline pipeline.
Okay, so
corroded. So
they were
blocking
it.
Up, and that's what caused the corrosion, I guess. Weird.
And then same according to the corrosion doctors. They said that the second cause of the disaster was a U-shaped siphon? Mm-hmm. Siphon. In the sewer needed to duck under a recently built underground railway. We'll discuss. The design allowed fluids to pass through but also block the fumes. There should have been a siphon for the fumes passing over the underground railway.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, this does go, like, pipe construction and, like, I'm just assuming that goes back to what Chris was saying, infrastructure or local government or whoever's in charge of keeping the pipes in line.
Well, the big twist, or maybe you'll get to this, is that the gas provider in Mexico is a monopoly run by the government.
Mm-hmm. We'll get there. But more importantly, right now, the reason that so if you can imagine, there are these sewer pipes, right, that have been there for I don't know how many years. Then they decided they wanted to run a subway system. This was 3 years before the explosion. And they built this under the city, but they wanted to, in many parts, the subway system had to go through the already pre-existing sewage pipes. So it had to cut through. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they created these U-turns for the pipes to go underneath the subway rails mm-hmm. to allow for the cut through.
So I see.
Picture like pipes underneath a kitchen sink, you know, like allowing for the subway. Now, what corrosion doctors is saying that it should have gone over the subway. The U's should have been over the subway to allow for the fumes passing.
Right. Well, this is we got to get the expert on this because this is sort of breaking my brain a little bit because we're talking about gases passing through the sewer line. They're the gases from the gas pipe, which is a different pipe altogether. The gas is leaking. The hexane is going in through the sewer lines. The sewer lines they're not built to sort of account for hexane gas, are they?
I don't know. I don't think they should be there at all. The hexane gas should be there at all.
Right.
So let's put the subway system, the 3-year-old subway system up on the board. And let's government workers' negligence up on
government
the board.
Government workers' negligence, okay.
According to Time, this is not the first time government negligence has caused a blow up in Guadalajara's sewers. A similar leak of chemicals in 1983 sent trees and cars flying in a 10-block area and injured 48 people. There have been other explosions in the country since 1978, including a series of gas explosions on the outskirts of Mexico City in 1984 that killed at least 400 people.
Wow.
According to the LA Times, Guillermo Cosia Vidaurri, governor of Jalisco State, whose capital is Guadalajara, told a news conference late Thursday that public safety workers allowed gas fumes to build up in the sewers unmonitored for 7 hours before the series of explosions began. The fire department and water department workers sent to monitor the gas levels apparently went home at 3 a.m. Wednesday because they were tired and thought there was not enough threat to warrant evacuation to the Reforma district.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So did you want to put someone up?
Well, I was just thinking we could get more specific than just government workers and say fire department and water department workers and also public safety workers.
Yeah.
Well, the fire department and the water department workers, it's like whoever is calling that shot, whoever is sending them home.
Right. But it's kind of on, like, they're whoever's in charge within them, they are responsible for assessing threats, right? Or it sounds like that's what they're saying in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unclear here who this person is. And I think that the reason it's all very unclear is because, as we'll find out, no one eventually was charged or pinpointed as a responsible party. Mm-hmm. No one.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, well, and in this particular instance, and maybe we should say public safety workers or the fire department or the water department, or maybe put those two together, the fire and water department. But in that particular instance, what we're talking about is they were sent to check on the sewer systems, which were emitting gas. They checked. It was high. They released these manhole covers, uh-huh. and the threat level went down from, I think, 100% to 0% combustibility, or 15%,
yeah, I think,
combustibility. So those people who were checking, when it got to 15, they said, okay, we're good. We're going to go home now. So, you know, in terms of cause of how this happened, those guys were sort of at the very end. They made a bad decision at the, sort of towards the end of the,
yeah,
of the issue, the tragedy, or
so
right before it was.
Maybe we caught, like, because in this article, outside the council chambers, however, opponents of the mayor gathered to denounce the government corruption they said was responsible for the tragedy.
Oh.
This had been happening for years, said Mayela Hernandez, 35. It's a system of the PRI, the ruling revolutionary institutional party, that is to blame.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get them. So I put government corruption because that's, you know, an alarmist classic.
Yeah.
And then should I put the mayor and the political party?
Yeah, let's put the mayor and let's talk about him. Mayor Dau. Now, this is according to Pamela Varley. The Attorney General Morales charged that at least 9 officials and bureaucrats were criminally responsible for the disaster. Mm. The 2 highest ranking officials to be indicted were Mayor Dau and the city cabinet official Aristeo Mejia, Secretary of Urban and Rural Development, for allegedly knowing of the danger yet failing to call for an evacuation. Following the release of the Attorney General's report, Dau disappeared and was declared a fugitive.
What?
Yeah. After Dow's lawyer made a fruitless attempt to secure a guarantee of immunity from prison for the mayor, Dau reappeared and voluntarily turned himself over.
Well, that doesn't look good.
No, not a good look.
No. He tried to pull a Ted Cruz there. It's like, I'm out of here. I don't care what's going on in my
city. Did he flee to the Four Seasons in Cancun?
Yeah, we don't know about Dow. I can fact check that if you want, but you'd have to submit. You have to submit an official fact check request. Okay.
I want to say that he went to, I think I read that he went to Seville, to Madrid, somewhere in Spain, Sevilla, or something.
Beautiful, beautiful. Must have been nice.
I mean, can you imagine being the mayor of a town that, or of a city that, it explodes and you're just like, I'm out.
I'm already looking at government corruption and going, I don't see it getting any better than that.
Now, here's one that we can just take off the list right now before I even say it. the citizens of Guadalajara. This is according to Pamela Varley. Late on the afternoon of April 22nd, Governor Cosillo declared that his administration had the situation under control and that there had been no negligence on the part of any authority. By April 23rd, Cosillo had altered his approach somewhat, now focusing his own lack of culpability. By April 24, the governor was waxing more philosophical, suggesting in a press conference that in some sense all citizens of Guadalajara shared responsibility for the tragedy.
God.
This is a quote. I say that we have all constructed this city.
No.
That we have made God. It with virtues and defects. Oh, come on. We have its features. We have it features that are ideal and others that are not. Yeah. No.
No. That's not how cities are constructed.
Put the governor.
Yeah.
That comment itself is no good.
Between the governor and that mayor, oh my God, these men.
Yeah. So this is, let's talk about him. Public debate about the evacuation question was complicated by a difference of opinion over who actually was empowered to order the evacuation. How many times have we seen this where they pass the buck? I mean, how many times? Many citizens believe that in reality, no one blew the rank of state, no one below the rank of state governor could have ordered the evacuation of a large section of central Guadalajara. The governor himself claimed that the mayor could have done so. As one federal administrator later explained, any local official's ability to call for an evacuation was based on the degrees to which he enjoyed the confidence of the governor rather than on his official position. So they're saying that the governor has to approve of it. Certainly in the eyes of the disaster victims, Governor Cosío was the man with the power and the man to blame. Oh, this is, I'm sorry, I got this wrong. By the end of April, Cosío announced that he had decided to take a year-long leave of absence and boarded a 4 a.m. flight to Seville, Spain.
Okay, so he's in Spain.
He's the one who goes to Spain. They both left.
Spain, what? Spain is beautiful.
No, I don't know if they both went to Spain, but the mayor and the governor left. The governor's the one who took a 4 a.m. flight, which to me is the most damning part of the evidence.
That just, he likes to get on an early flight. He wanted to get to Spain early.
No, he wanted no one to see him
in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Well, so I think we're confusing the two, because I think the mayor absconded. Like he left in secrecy, but this looks like this guy Cosío, he made an announcement that he's taking a year long leave.
Like, how convenient. It's the end of it. I mean, this happened on April 21st. And by the end of April, he's like, I need a year long leave. What?
Oh my God. These guys are horrible. But we're not putting Spain on the board. If that's what you're thinking, Chris.
Leave Spain out of it.
Leave Spain out of it.
That's not acceptable. Unacceptable. Finally, let's put Pemex up on the board.
Okay.
Let's call it Pemex for now, but it could be Pemex embezzling. Again, Pamela Varley. In the eyes of the general public, there was no doubt that Pemex was to blame. A damning but quite prevalent rumor held that Pemex workers had been embezzling gasoline via the La Noguera facility and had learned that the attorney general's office was just about to inspect the facility. Fearful of being caught with an oversupply of gasoline, the theory went, Pemex workers had simply dumped the excess fuel down the drain. For a technical point of view, this theory would explain why so much gasoline wound up inside the sewer pipes instead of permeating the subsoil. In Mexico, as Chris had stated earlier, there's only one company that supplies gasoline, and that's Pemex. They have a monopoly, which explains, too, why there is a need to embezzle almost or steal.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this before because they have a monopoly over the gas prices and how you can acquire gasoline, which, you know, we don't. I mean, we have been thinking about it more and more here in the U.S., but if, you know, we need gas to travel. We need gas.
You sure do.
To go it. Thank you. And if you don't know where you can acquire from, or if it's too expensive and it's being run by one company, then all of a sudden, gas is extremely important.
Yeah, they can control the output. And then all of a sudden, you're in a position where you have to start thinking of other options. So you find your guy who works at Pemex. You're like, hey, buddy, come here. I'll give you a whole big thing of pesos if you just get me some gasoline. And that's how it goes. So you got to put monopolies on there.
And,
because that's the structure that created an embezzling. We don't know if embezzling was the cause, because this is just a theory.
Mm-hmm.
Pemex negligence is coming up next, which I think could be interesting too.
Uh-huh. I like what you said about monopolies, because the more and more you think about it, monopolies create corruption, right?
Oh yeah. Well,
it's not a free market.
If you can control a certain pinch point in the economy. You know, you have so much power. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about Amazon. They're able to, like, they have not only the they don't not only sell products, they own the platform, so they can control if somebody wants to sell their wares on Amazon. If you're doing really well, they can make something just like you make and promote their product, and then send yours down to page 12 on the Amazon search bar. And then, you know, they can control everything, yes, basically.
So let's put Pemex negligence up on the board.
Okay, got it.
Time magazine said Mexico's attorney general issued a report blaming the state-owned oil giant Pemex for the explosion last month that destroyed 20 blocks of downtown Guadalajara. Police indicted four Pemex executives, the mayor of Guadalajara, and other officials charged them with with negligent homicide in connection with the blast. Pemex was offered 40 million pesos to mitigate the disgrace of the estimated 300 million damage caused by the blast. Okay, so just for the record, 40 million pesos is $2 million. And that's what they're paying for the estimated $300 million in damage caused by the blast. This is not even considering all of the casualties and the injured.
That's not enough.
That doesn't add up.
No.
Pemex claimed that this was a donation, not an admittance of responsibility.
Ultimately,
the Pemex executives were cleared of all charges.
Well, that's the play. That's the play. If you have the power and you have the resources and you have the lawyers, you can cut a check and you just work it in the budget at the end of the year. It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace.
Well, what's so interesting and frustrating too is that obviously a thorough investigation was never really done, because it sounds like the Pemex employee corruption is just a theory. And also, like, would that even be enough gasoline to cause this level of explosion? On the other hand, the other option is a 1 centimeter hole that was supposed to have done this. So they both seem like a little bit, I don't know, maybe I'm not understanding fully, which I'm sure is part of it. But at the same time, it seems like it could be both or neither. Wow. Or one and not the other. And we'll never really know.
Well, the 1 centimeter hole theory was, they came up with that, the attorney general or whatever, came up with that after a 3-day investigation. To 72 hours, he figured it out. So I think it's very dubious. And I don't think the citizens bought that. And I was watching that documentary on this, and they said that a team from Houston went down to help out, and they did their own sort of investigation, and they found a corroded pipe that was closer to the plant that was way worse and not 1 centimeter. And so there could be a government cover-up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Totally.
I'm sure the government also wants to blame Pemex, you know, instead of having the pipes be blamed, because that's more their problem.
Yeah, pass the buck. Well,
so we have a really nice list here. Are we ready to transition?
Let's do it. Let's take a break, and then we'll start knocking things off the list.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Okay, who's to blame for the 1992 Guadalajara explosions? Pipe construction, subway system, government workers' negligence, the fire department, water department workers, public safety workers, government corruption, Mayor Dow, Ernesto Mejia, the Secretary of Urban and Rural Development, Governor Cosio, Pemex for embezzling, monopolies, or Pemex for negligence?
It's hard. This is hard because it's like there we just don't have exactly the answer, so we're going to have to get creative.
Yeah. What do you think about... Oh, man.
Okay.
I think we can take the fire department and the water department out because I think this is bigger than them. They weren't going to have the... They didn't have the power to really... call for an evacuation
or put the gas back in the tank. Like they couldn't put the toothpaste back in the toothpaste thing. They were just like checking how much toothpaste was out there already.
Thank you for using toothpaste because now I understand.
And more people brush their teeth with toothpaste than they do with gasoline. So I figured
most people, I would say, hope
almost everyone.
I think also we can wrap up public safety workers. I mean, all of this can go into government workers' negligence.
I agree. Now, the mayor and the governor, I think Aristeo Mejia, we can fold him into the, we just don't know exactly if he was to blame, you know, but we can fold him into the public safety workers, which just got crossed off the list. And government corruption, so he folds into that.
Yeah.
Government workers' negligence or government corruption? What do we think here? I think the corruption is more to blame, right? Negligence is part of the corruption.
Yeah, well, but I'm trying to follow the money. It's like it's almost like negligence, like they just didn't care. Because I'm wondering, like, I'm sure everything was corrupt, but usually when you're dealing with corruption, it's because... it's hard. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, negligence is more passive. So, you know, corruption has a more active sort of feel to it. It's like, did they go out of their way to try and hurt the people of Guadalajara, or did they go out of their way? It was more about convenience, and they just sort of turned the other way when it came to replacing pipes or making sure that the pipelines ran correctly.
Right, it's almost like a laziness.
Right. Well, that would be negligence, right? But on the other hand, you got to think they're doing those things to save money. You know, this all comes down and money and is about. And money's the main driver.
Yeah.
And that's what's corrupt about it is that they're putting money over the well-being of people.
Maybe negligence just lets them off the hook too much.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I think let's go with corruption over negligence.
Yeah. We got to bounce the subway system too, right?
Yeah, that can't be made. Because that goes with it.
It was just that caused the pipe to put that little U-turn in the
pipe. Now, the pipe construction, whoever was in charge of that, probably the government, right?
Yeah.
So we still have pipe construction, government corruption. Well, the pipes aren't constructing themselves. So let's fold the pipes into the government corruption.
Okay.
Can't argue with that point.
I mean, steel is just sitting in mines by itself, just sitting in the hills. People go in there and they make the pipes. Like, we did that.
It's true. Yeah, we made the pipes.
So government corruption, Mayor Dow, Governor Cosillo, Pemex embezzling or Pemex negligence. I think Pemex in general. Let's just make it Pemex.
Okay.
And finally, monopolies are left.
I mean, it's so hard because we don't, I'm just assuming, honestly, I'm narrowing in on the mayor, the governor, and Pemex as this like trifecto.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because it's a state-owned, it's a government-owned business, the gasoline, Pemex.
That's true. And, you know, there is oversight in the government, and they live in a democracy, so they can vote in people and out people. So that's where sort of oversight comes in, whereas monopoly, that in a capitalist system, is there's no oversight, really. I mean, unless we create laws to sort of regulate them. But,
well, yeah, so what are you saying?
I'm saying that monopolies to me implies... implies that just the fact that the government runs this monopoly,
yeah,
it sort of doesn't make it a monopoly in the sort of traditional sense that you think of, like with the guy with the mustache in the Monopoly game. It's like where it's in a capitalist system.
Well, the guy in the mustache in the Monopoly game could be the government official.
It's true.
I mean, it's just what's his other job,
right?
You know,
it's just, is he wearing a tuxedo or is he wearing
his
government issued pants?
I don't think that really changes perception of what a monopoly is.
I guess whether that's fair.
It's in a capitalistic society, whether it's run by the government, a monopoly is a monopoly, and I think that is a problem.
Yeah, but especially if people are stealing oil because of the monopoly, which is speculative.
Yeah. But I shouldn't even bring this up because I need to do more research on this. But there were recently, like, do you remember, it was maybe a few years ago, there had been people who, the gasoline was coming out of pipes in Mexico, some part of Mexico, and they had run to put the gas in like containers because gas prices were so high. You remember this? And then there was a massive fire and a lot of people died. Like, this
oh, geez.
I'm not saying that was a different issue, but gasoline and the monopoly of gasoline seems to be a problem from what I'm gathering.
Well, that's interesting. And so now I'm thinking if we wanted to, we could wrap the mayor and the governor into government corruption. If we wanted to kind of swoop them both up and send them both to jail, uh-huh. And then we could maybe either Pemex or Monopolies get the slap.
Yeah, I like that, Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
So let's wrap them into government corruption, but like we'll also say their names when I send them to jail.
Okay, yeah, because that's satisfying for you.
Yeah, and... And then do you want to slap Pemex or Monopolies? Do you want to slap Pemex knowing we're slapping a monopoly? Or do we want to slap Monopolies knowing that Pemex is under monopoly?
What do you think, Amanda?
Let me think.
It's a very chicken and the egg thing here. I don't know. This is.
I'm mad at Pemex because they barely had to pay anything. And I just have an instinct they were all in cahoots.
So we'll slap Pemex knowing it's a monopoly.
Okay.
That
whatever,
sounds good.
Whatever gets us to sleep tonight.
Okay, I'm going to call it. Pemex, understanding that it's a monopoly, you're getting the big slap. Government corruption, especially from Mayor Dow and Governor Cosillo, you're going to the alarmist jail. Yeah. So no Spain for you, two guys.
Try, you know what? Yeah, you can try asking one of our guards if you can book a 4 a.m. trip to Seville. he'll laugh at your face.
Yeah, he will. Yeah, and I would love to get that 4 a.m. phone call from the guard being like, hey, Rebecca, is it cool if Governor Cosillo
flies to Seville? And we'd fire the guard if he tried to make that phone call just for bothering.
Yeah, but I would first get
her. Where'd you get her home number? You shouldn't be giving out your personal cell to all the guards.
All the guards know my number.
No, Rebecca has her it's her face, her name, and her phone number up on all the walls of the prison. So everyone can contact her. It's sort of like Ashton Kutcher putting his phone number on Twitter, you know? Like, you can call with suggestions or questions.
I do, because you just never know. I like to be informed. I'm like those bachelorettes who are always, like, telling the guys in the house to talk about the bad guy,
talk shit about the other guys. Yeah.
Oh God, you should give him the Erios hotline.
Okay, oh, yeah. Fine. Oh yeah, but okay. Well, we'll do that next. Now I know. I'll give him that number.
That's going to be a lot of work to go through and change all those posters. That's a lot of money.
Well, that's why I hired a fact checker.
Okay, there's a lot that's falling under my responsibilities that I did not sign up for, but I guess keep those. What are those keys coming? Those finger keys?
Your touch tools.
My touch tools. Yeah. Keep those coming. So I get paid.
Well,
Chris, touch tool toes.
Ew! The grossest thing ever spoken on this podcast. Amanda, Chris, thank you so much for being the special guest. Sometimes we have to treat ourselves to being special guests, you know? Be guests in your own home.
I had a great
thanks
time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
After the Guadalajara explosions, on April 27th, 1992, the mayor of Guadalajara and the secretary for urban and rural development were detained on charges of failing to evacuate the area before the explosions. Four Pemex employees and executives from SIAPA were also arrested. 3 days later, the governor of Jalisco took a leave of absence, fleeing Guadalajara, never to return to his post after losing public support when he made insensitive remarks in the wake of the tragedy. Investigators concluded that thousands of gallons of gasoline had leaked from a corroded Pemex duct that ran directly above the sewer line, but the Mexican government refused to admit fault in the disaster. An official report was released in December of 1993. The 43,000-page document did not incriminate even one of the nine officials on trial and confirmed that no charges would be brought against anyone in connection with the explosions. Pemex reluctantly agreed to pay out what they called a, quote, donation of 40 million pesos to the victims. That's under $2 million to be split amongst the families of over 200 deceased and approximately 1,400 injured, while continuing to take zero responsibility for the disaster. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at Alarmist The on Twitter, at The Alarmist Podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Russian Olympic cheating scandal.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.